6:02 on a Friday. Triple N for Tiffany Sports Radio, 92.9 a game. It's the morning shift. 3 hours of misinformation and hilarity.
Well, hey, Hunter, you are the fountain of misinformation because I'm a truth teller.
Oh, man.
Those that accuse you of misinformation, here's a little bit of advice from my Uncle Rob. Those that accuse you of misinformation are the ones perpetrating it. Just leave it at that.
Mike, I told you in the clocking in video that it wasn't if, it was how quickly did Rob Tribble go off the rails.
Yeah.
And he went off the rails literally.
I asked him this morning, Rob, like, you know, right when we rolled in the parking deck. I said, how quickly does Rob go off the rails? He said, immediately. Immediately.
Rob is in
It usually happens quickly out the gate.
Of a corrective emotional
experience.
Yeah. So
there's somebody out there right now that is listening to us, and they're treating their radio the same way Geno Smith treated his tablet last night. I don't know if you guys saw that clip. He just headbutted it like 5 times, then slammed it down and broke it in half.
Geno's got an interesting look with his helmet off right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, he got an interesting look. I like Geno, though.
I'm so happy for him and what his career has done.
Oh, you know,
talk about sticking with it and then finally getting your deal, and he's played decently well.
Well,
it goes to my point yesterday where I was like, nobody wants to play quarterback for the Jets.
But
like, it's just not a good place to be.
But he's also, you're so right on that, but he's also, he's what's wrong with the NFL game right now. And sports in general, where we don't give time, and John Smoltz has said it time and time. Every time John Smoltz comes on a radio show, or every time I hear him interviewed, he says, had I pitched in today's era, I would have been, moved on and doing something else, because there's no patience and people have zero patience with players and coaches, et cetera. And Geno Smith is a perfect example. He was in a system that did him no favors in college as far as the NFL game. As far as the NFL game.
What do you mean by that?
I think the system. Well, it was completely different from when he went into New York.
No doubt about that.
And I think that system in college basically catered to the players and his skills to just win, and he didn't learn the game. And I don't think I think the helmets, headsets and the helmets now, yeah. I think it's going to be the best thing for development of young quarterbacks, because you can talk to them up to 15 seconds, and I hope that we see so less of the hurry up to the line and then stand and look for 30 seconds at play cards. And
right.
and I hope that they talk guys through, what are you seeing? Hey, you see that two safety look?
That's like, a good point.
Like, I hope that there's really coaching until 15 seconds and then they go. But I just think Geno Smith could have been this in New York had they had patience, better coaches, better systems around it. Joel Klatt said the dumbest thing I've ever heard someone say about the NFL, and he said that coaching does not matter in the NFL. He said it on that little loudmouth guy on Fox's show that they give all the money to in the afternoons. And he goes, yeah, coaching doesn't matter. It's all about quarterbacks. Look at the quarterbacks that win. Look at Brady or Belichick without Brady. And there's a lot of truth to that, but there's so much wrong about that. Yeah, quarterbacks win, but the reality of the situation is they have to go and have the right coaches with them. You have to have...
Well, look at Baker.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, how about this one? Sam Darnold.
Yes.
How about that one?
Exactly.
That's
proof that coaching matters.
Thing I've ever heard.
And Mike, take it a step further. It's not just coaching. It's who the coaches put in those systems, like the strength and conditioning coaches and all these programs.
And that's what I've fought back against whatever Klatt is talking about, whatever his narrative is. I've fought back against that for years, to where I don't think people understand. And I say this to Falcons fans and just fans in general, how big development is in the NFL. Like, and I'm not talking about just, Rob, I'm not talking about from a cerebral perspective of reading defenses. Obviously, that's best for the quarterback. But these guys show up, and a lot of times it's like, well, you know, he'll fill out. He's a light, he's 20. He's 20 years old, like Kyle Pitts, prime example. 20 years old, you know, he's going to hit another gear. Like, if you don't continue to work out and do all the same things and keep the same guardrails that you had throughout that college program that was a year-round program that had somebody looking over your shoulder every step of the way, when you finish your season in the NFL in January and they say, hey, we'll see you in April, if you don't continue to do all those things that got you to that level, you're going to come into training camp and people are going to go, what's wrong with this dude? Like, why is he a step slow? Why is his team regressed? And there's usually a reason for that. So – yeah, development in all phases, not just reading defenses and stuff, is a massive part of what the NFL is and what some teams tend to get wrong. It's just, it's not as easy as saying, well, this guy was a bust, that guy was a bust. I talk about with the Jets all the time. Would you want, if you were the number one pick in the draft, would you want the Jets to select you at quarterback? Absolutely freaking not.
No. And no. Go look at last night's game, to your point. Geno Smith, a guy that was had a bad situation and then was able to develop with the right people around him and learning various systems. And then go to the other side, Brock Purdy. Who I watched Brock Purdy's whole career at Iowa State. I watched a lot of his games with Arch when we're on the road, Rob, and you know how that goes. And Brock Purdy was the last player drafted, and he is a freaking stud in the NFL. He made a throw last night to George Kittle in that corner of the end zone. It's a little bench route, corner route.
Made a couple of them,
and it's unbelievable. He is the product of he's got good players around him, but he's also got the best offensive coordinator in the NFL. And the best play caller in the NFL offensively right now, that's Kyle Shanahan. And that, look at the difference it made in the last Mr. Irrelevant. That's why when Joel Klatt says that stuff, I'm like, you can't believe the garbage that comes out of your mouth sometimes.
Well, and here's the thing, I'm not as big a Klatt hater as some, but it's he's out of pocket. And Rob, I think you'll agree with this. I think what Shanahan did with Brock Purdy is exactly what Arthur Smith thought he might be able to do with D. Ritty, the Cincinnati kid.
Right.
He's like, well, my offensive scheme will take over. And, I just need somebody to get the ball to where I want it to go. I don't necessarily need him to make all these reads. I'm going to simply, remember we heard Ray McLeod talking about that this preseason. He's like, you know, the 49ers it's different because we scheme up to get it to one guy. And in Atlanta, it's kind of like, hey, let's read the defense and let's see where the defense lets us go with it. And I thought that was very intriguing. I think that both styles can work, and obviously they have here recently.
Being reactionary, inflicting your will.
Yeah, but I think to the point, I think Kyle Shanahan does a good job of saying, look, Brock Purdy can get it from A to B, and he can do some things with his legs. He's a magician with his legs at times, and we'll see what happens when we roll it out there.
Well, that's what I hope that we see from Zach Robinson as he progresses, is the figure, taking what defense has given you and exploiting it. I think they did a good job on the last week on Thursday night of doing that. And you know what? They're banged up. Kirk's processing. His anticipation is there. They're giving us this. Let's let it eat. Let's call these plays to get all these guys in the ball. And I think it works. I think you can some guys overthink it, but I said to Arch the other day, and he didn't disagree with me, so it doesn't mean he necessarily agrees, but he didn't tell me I was an idiot. Which
he probably wasn't
lot,
listening.
No, he was listening. We were making eye contact. We were on the plane. I got his attention.
Eye contact.
Well, I want to make sure he was listening.
You have a candle, too?
No, we had Jake in between us, our engineer. So,
it's just good.
Yeah. But I said, I really do. The more and more I'm around the NFL game, the difference in 7-10 and 10-7 is coaching. Because I think there are some bad teams out there, but the reality is the games are too close, and the salary cap, the way it's structured, the teams are the talent is too close. I mean, there is just not a big difference. That's why there's so many close games. And I think coaching sometimes sets that apart. Yeah, X factors. But when you get the X factor like Patrick Mahomes, that's why you win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years.
Well, let's not bury the lead. Rob, how are you doing, man? you know what I mean?
I'm just fine. It was fun watching the NFL last Sunday. All those early games went down to the wire.
Yeah, they
now,
did,
that was
man.
Fun to watch. And that's what the NFL is now. It seems like it's completely up for grabs right now.
It really
even
does.
Your unbeaten teams don't look.
Way.
Yeah, even your unbeaten teams don't look like they're perfect teams by any stretch.
When we get into college football later in the show, the question I was going to give y'all was, who is the most consistent team in college football? And I do not know the answer.
I don't think there is one.
I think it's Texas through 6 weeks. I think Texas is it so far.
I think that's.
We got to take into account schedule.
I was
going to
say.
Year,
I mean,
too.
I think that's hard to say at this point.
But here's the thing for me is even teams that have played some good teams have come back and had some hiccups with lesser teams, and I haven't really seen them do that yet. And that's to me why I hold them because Tennessee. I thought Tennessee was a world beater.
I expect the Texas to early beat Mississippi State last week
State's just not very good.
No.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I expected it to be like a 30-point game at halftime. It just wasn't. Maybe my expectations were out of pocket. But
I think if Quinn Ewers was playing quarterback, probably.
Oh, here we go.
Well, right. Who was Texas played? Number 10 Michigan, who's clearly overrated. They're not what they were last year.
Michigan's still they're still good defensively. They're not.
Still good defensively.
Not, yeah, they're not. You're right. Their quarterback play is
Colorado
garbage.
Colorado State, Texas San Antonio, Louisiana Monroe, Mississippi State. Well, they're consistently beating mediocre teams and a pretty good victory on the road at Michigan. But yeah, we'll see.
They got to see this week.
Tomorrow. Yep.
Oh, I got a stat about when I make my pick. I got a stat about the Oklahoma game. You're gonna be like, I'm sorry, what?
All right, gonna come back. Falcons, Panthers. Don't overlook this one. And according to these numbers, the Falcons have actually gotten progressively worse. What does that mean? Coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio 929 Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Falcons, Panthers, 425 Sunday up there in beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina. And Falcons are 3-2 in spite of the fact they're not running the ball or they're not stopping the run either. Two of the cardinal rules of football, gentlemen. And you can say they've gotten progressively worse as far as points allowed. 18 versus the Steelers, 21 versus the Eagles, 22 against the Chiefs, 24 against the Saints, and 30 against the Bucks. But you're sitting at 3-2. You're 3-0 in the conference, 2-0 in the division. Your only losses are to AFC teams. So work in progress, but hey, it's good to be 3-2.
The point scored thing, you can throw that out personally. Thursday night game, short
rest.
Yeah,
you also have different calibers of offenses you're facing, but you're giving up a ton of rushing yards to every team you face, though.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about that. And I think part of that is how you're playing defense. Because you're keeping, but you're giving them looks.
Do you think it's schematic more than maybe limited personnel?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there is schematics that they have that are allowing teams to run. But I also think you miss Nate Landman. I just don't
see he's back though. At least he's practicing.
His window is open, and
what's the 21-day practice window? Yeah. Is what they call it.
And so I think he was limited yesterday in practice as well. And so there's a chance, yeah, he's back. And I don't know if you're going to have Troy Anderson this week at all. Today will be the day to tell because I don't think he practiced yesterday.
He's going to be that guy that's going to be injured his entire career, it seems like.
Yeah, it's definitely on that trajectory at this moment. But, I also think missing a Thursday night game after a physical game like you played with the Saints and having – where he had 17 tackles and he did bang his knee up a little bit. I kind of expected him to come back this week, but right now you don't necessarily see it. But to the run game, I just don't think the linebackers, I don't think you're doing a great job up front, but I also think your linebackers are doing a good job of shedding blockers. And I've said that like over and over again and getting off these blocks and making these tackles in a hole.
Yeah, but that's 5 yards downfield though. So you're giving about 5 yards.
But the problem is they're supposed to shed and get in there and fill that hole and those gaps. But I also think when you're playing these safeties back, Mike, that it's also daring teams to run on you.
Well, and I think we're missing one of the bigger points here, and it's not to me the point is not so much about what they can gain on the ground; it's what they can gain on the clock. Rob, you and I have not had a chance to talk about Alabama and Vanderbilt this past weekend, and obviously one of the crazier losses in Alabama history as the number one ranked team, you lose to Vanderbilt. Bama has never. From what I've heard, allowed any other team to possess the ball for more than 40 minutes. And Vandy had it for 42 minutes. 42 minutes this past weekend. If you look at what Carolina is and you look at what the possibilities are, no, they are not an elite offensive unit, right? No, their defense has struggled. They're one of the worst teams in red zone percentage in the league defensively, and they're one of the worst teams at pressure rate. In the league defensively, all right? So how do you go about a game plan if you're the Panthers going into this weekend, the quarterback play has been spotty, you're nicked up in the wide receiver core, you don't really know what you have, you use Chuba Hubbard, right? And you try to control the clock, and you try to get 5 and 6 yards at a time because that has happened to the Falcons numerous times this year where they cannot get off the field. And we know, especially before last Thursday, that time of possession has been the Achilles heel of this Atlanta team. So when we kind of look at this game and we look at it from that 10,000-foot view and say, man, how in the world could the Falcons lose to a team as bad as the Panthers? That's how. You run Chuba Hubbard and you run him 30 times and you keep Kirk Cousins and that offense off the field and don't allow them to get the ball rolling offensively to where the timing starts to sync up and they can make explosive plays. That's the blueprint. That's what Dave Canales is going to go into this game thinking that he can get done on the ground. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Falcons do to counter that defensively along the defensive line and with the banged up linebacking core.
And honestly, if you don't have Landman and Anderson, I think you bring Justin Simmons down the box and let him play off some of the stuff we saw him do at Denver. He is very good in the box against the run game, or he was in the past. I'm not opposed to that, but you also have to do the little things. And I don't want to start throwing out cliche terms, but you have to do a good job on the edge of setting the edge and extending run plays. But I feel like a lot of the ways that we've been hurt the most is just right up inside.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And at times last week, it was interesting to me because obviously you knew Bertrand going into the game last week was going to see his most extensive time by far, and mm-hmm. he did. But
wasn't
it also
last week the first time any rookies have played this year? Aurora and
Bertrand has played, but not like the role he did last week. Like, he's been special teams and everything else, and obviously he was a featured piece of the defense last week. And Rook was definitely the first time that he had played any of the defensive linemen.
And he played well. I thought Rook played well.
Well, in fact, I heard his name three or four times indicates he was making an impact.
It's only a matter of time. Here's what I'll say, though. Bertrand, as part of this plan, it was like half of what you would have done with a Troy Anderson. And the other half, guys, they go into like this 6-1 spacing where you leave four defensive linemen in the game, all right, use a couple of outside linebackers, and then you use Caden Ellis kind of in the middle as like the first guy, the only guy that's at the linebacker depth. And then at the last minute, they did a nice job of kind of rolling Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates down into run support next to Caden Ellis. I thought it was a really good game plan as far as how they were going to defend the run last week. So it was like, hey, we're not just going to use apples to apples and put J.D. Bertrand where we would Troy Anderson. We'll do a number of different things. We'll use nickel personnel, and we'll use four defensive linemen and a lot of other things to kind of give different looks so they can't just attack J.D. Bertrand in coverage.
And 42 of their yards last week came on Baker Mayfield scrambles. And so if you go look, you gave up 160 yards. But if you and I know you can't, and I know it counts, but those are scrambles out of the pocket on passing plays. That they in reality, they allowed 118 yards if you take away that, which is would have been their best day all year against the run game,
yeah,
Mike.
For sure.
So, and Rob, Andy Dalton doesn't bring that. Yeah, he might get out every once in a while and get you 5-6 yards. I think in some ways he's probably a little bit better than Kirk at that, but not much.
How good has Hubbard been, though? He's pretty much a focal point of that offense. He's still averaging almost 6 yards a carry.
Yeah, he's got 400 yards, but just a hair under 400 yards for the season.
Back-to-back games, he had a 38-yard run against the Bears and the Bengals, so he can also get loose as well.
And they busted that right up the middle. But now they're down a couple offensive linemen.
Yep.
I think it's true. I think this game is going to be won. If the Panthers win this game, Mike nailed it. It's Chuba Hubbard. It's their run game. And then can they possess the ball? On the other side, though, the Falcons found something with the passing game and the way that they were able to cut the Bucks up, I should say, in the carve them up in the passing game, where you were able to use it to possess the ball and keep them off the field. Baker Mayfield looked great last week. He was 19, I think, of 24 with 3 touchdowns. Only had 180 yards.
Yep.
And you talked about the scoring. I thought that was the style of game that it was, where they scored 30. You gave up 21 to Jalen Hurts and the Eagles offense, which even without A.J. Brown is still a pretty good offense.
They almost rushed for 200 yards. I'm just saying going forward, this has to be addressed, though. You know.
Well, it's the rushing. It's not the scoring for me.
Yep.
I think if you're giving up 20 points in that range a game, yeah, you should be okay.
I'm not overemphasizing, but it is a symptom, though. Hope you can clean up and get better at.
But I think you nailed it when you talk about the run game and the time of possession. Like, the run game is what's allowing them to eat you up, and that's why they're accumulating more points. Because you're bending, and you're not necessarily breaking. But they did break a little bit last week in the red zone. So I don't disagree. I just think you got to shut their run game down. That's where it worries me the most. I mean, we haven't seen a lot yet from Xavier Leggett. I mean, you might. He's a good rookie. If he can get going, but the other side, I'm not worried about balance as much as just scoring points.
Is this gonna be one of those? Seems like Falcons Panthers play those ugly, plotting, playing in mud up
9-12.
Yes, yes.
Please,
that's
no.
What it always feels like with these two teams.
No, thank you.
Well, to that point, though, we've played them in some – they had the Thursday night game in 22 where it was rainy, heavy rain, foggy, kind of a, not a good environment. Then you had last year, which was in December, rainy, foggy, overcast. Sunday's going to be 79 and sunny.
Well, look, and when we get to 7 o'clock and back to the Falcons discussion, I've got some stats of what the Falcons are the best at in the league and what the Falcons are the worst at in the league that kind of encompass what this game might be. But here's what I'll say. We talk about time possession, and you talk about gritty games. And, Rob, I think you're dead on. I think the worst thing you can do for a team like Carolina, especially when you look at their scoring margin this year, is to let them still have hope deep into the second half. Their scoring margin this year is the worst in the league.
Yep.
45 points to 105 points in the first half is the worst margin in the league this year, right? They've given up 105 points in the first half and have only scored 45. If you get to the second half and they feel like they're still in it, that's a completely different ball game for Carolina right now.
And that's playing clean football. If they turn the ball over, score 7, not 3. If you get down in the red area, don't have a big penalty. The one thing that Arch says, he said so many times to me in games, you can't let them hang around. Do not let – if you have an opportunity early in this game to put your foot on their throat, you better do it with full force. Do not let a team like Carolina hang around.
And you got to be careful, too. Andy Dalton's been around. He's seen about everything you can see on a football field, and he can beat you if you mess around.
Well, we mentioned it yesterday, Rob. People don't understand. He's the same age as Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Like, he's the same age.
If you play that off coverage, Mike, and you let him just dink and dunk, he's gonna take full advantage of it.
All right, here we go. Week 7, college football tomorrow. Big game out there in Oregon. That might be the biggest one. Georgia, it's going to be Bulldog-on-Bulldog action in Athens. Georgia Tech heading up to Chapel Hill. Getting some college football coming up next in the morning shift, Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Star brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Nice pull, Dylon. Little 80s alternative rock from the Cult, bruh.
You never know what Dylon – like, sometimes Dylon just has his throwaway bumper music. And then sometimes he just pulls one out, and you're like, man, where'd this come from?
It's a total banger.
I got to go back there and just check, like, his screen and just see if there's just, like, a quick play button, and then there's, like, a whole catalog.
There's already songs loaded in there.
Yeah.
There's songs, because I've obviously done that. I've been back there before. I can tell you that song was already loaded for Dylon, and he just said, oh, okay.
That sounds good.
They haven't told me I can't play this song, so I'm just going to let it go.
The secret is there's no secret. I literally just go through our music catalog that's in here. Now, sometimes I will pull specific songs, obviously, but a lot of times I'm just pull a random song from what's already loaded into our wide orbit system, and I pop it in, and a lot of times I don't even know what song I'm playing, but I hope you guys like it.
And I know, with all due respect, I can assure you that he did not know what song that was playing. Am I?
You are absolutely correct on that.
I just don't think
that's okay. Though.
I don't. Yeah. Well,
he's a young man. He doesn't know.
That's not a hate thing. Yeah. Sometimes you can tell the truth without it being disrespectful. You know, it wasn't meant in any way.
Not in this day and age.
I don't feel disrespected at all, Squid Billy. Rest assured, I don't feel disrespected at all.
Oh man, I've been having that conversation a lot this week with my Alabama friends. Well, some of the digital I've been doing, man, it's been crazy, some of the back and forth. That there is a 5%, Rob, of the Bama fan base that is in flames right now, man. And there seems to be 90% that are just like, yeah, man, we lost. It is what it is. So,
I guess it's probably the breakdown discipline, the temper tantrums on the field. This, that, you know, that was would that have happened under Nick?
So that's actually been a big topic for some of the digital and the pods I've been doing this week. And the answer is, in a smaller portion, yes.
Yeah.
You know, you had times where guys threw tantrum on the sideline or got in an argument. Devontae Smith punched somebody in the middle of a game.
That happens. You know?
I don't think you would have. I don't think it would have quadrupled down the way it did, where you threw a mouthpiece and kicked the ball and slammed a guy's hat and then refused to field. The problem is that it. I don't know that you would have gone without a suspension for Malachi Moore this week, the way that you might have had it been under Nick.
Well, you know what. Different situation, but Jermaine Burton did punch an individual after a game and play the next week.
I know. And that's my point.
A fan, by the way. A fan. He cold-cocked a fan and play the next week. So under Nick Saban. So let's not act like Nick Saban was.
Do you mind if I finish? Can I finish the statement? My point is that all the stuff that Malachi did, it wasn't just, if he just throws the mouthpiece, nothing happens. If he just kicks a football, probably nothing happens. If he just slams the guy's head, probably nothing happens. You put four of them together, and I have a hard time with the fact that maybe nothing happens.
Well, he's having a toddler tantrum on the field.
And the other thing is, this is the first year, and this is the other part. This is the first year Nick never did this. He didn't do captains before the year. Always did it after the year. And this is why, because Malachi Moore is a fifth-year player wearing a C on his chest, right? And that's kind of a big deal. Like, you're the captain of the team throwing the tantrum. So that's a whole other aspect to it. I'm not going to sit here and say that this doesn't happen under Nick Saban or wouldn't have happened under Nick Saban. I just think that when you look at everything around Malachi, the response would have been different under Nick Saban. Man, you know, we'd have handled it internally. We'd have done all this other stuff. Kalen DeBoer has been very passive about it. And I think that for a lot of Alabama fans, it's been kind of hard to swallow, to be honest with you. So there's a number of different ways to look at it. It's not perfect. I think that a lot of people around that program just, hey, let's move on.
I think sometimes people forget what things that happen under certain people, and then they just that's their fallback because they're scared. And I understand Alabama fans are scared. I don't mean it negatively, but they're scared they're not going to have the success under Kalen DeBoer. Because it's natural. When you lose something like, you don't think Patriots fans aren't scared they're never going to have any like long-term success again like they did under Bill Belichick?
Oh, yeah. I think that ship has sailed under Belichick a couple of years ago.
But the reality is that you as fans, you worry, you get scared, you get spoiled by your riches, and when the fear of being broke is there, Alabama fans have experienced it. They went through that era in the late 90s to early 2000s where they weren't very good.
No, and to your point, and you guys will probably follow along with me, because one of the problems I have had, now the Malachi Moore situation is separate. Would that have happened under Nick? Would it not have? Would he have refused to leave the field? That definitely wouldn't have happened under Saban. He would have lost his mind. He refusing to get off the field, he's been taken out of the game. But I think the whole thing where this Vanderbilt loss would have never happened under Nick, I think that's completely misplaced. Because I mean, I looked at a team playing a 6-5 Auburn last year that had to convert a 4th-and-31 right, at the end right. of the game. I looked at a team that went on a road to South Florida and won by like 10 points.
Well, Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah, I happened to be there for that one, Rob. Thank you for bringing up that.
Saban never faced a Vanderbilt like that.
No, and that's really the conversation that I think is worth talking about that game last week. Yes, it's Vanderbilt. Yes, that has not happened. Vanderbilt's never beaten number one team. Vanderbilt didn't just bring in a transfer portal quarterback. They brought in his offensive coordinator. They brought in they brought in Jerry Kill and Tim Beck and surrounded him with everything he had at New Mexico State that was good, and just said, let's just do it here in a different uniform. It wasn't learning a new system.
Well, more times than not, teams like that, they can match you 22-on-22. Yeah.
Well,
and it's the depth that usually
I put out
this team.
The digital I'm doing, Rob, I put out a podcast last Thursday, and the headline of this podcast was Vanderbilt can beat Alabama. And it got laughed out of comment sections. Like, y'all are crazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, I'm just telling you, I've watched this team. They are efficient.
Yeah.
And efficiency in college football can beat teams with more talent when the talent doesn't always play up to its level.
Well, it shows you how crazy college football is. Vanderbilt came here and lost to Georgia State, but they beat Virginia Tech, who everyone thought was.
And they should have beaten Missouri.
Yes.
You ain't watched the Missouri game. They should have beaten Missouri.
I don't think Missouri's that good either. I think when you go down to it, but see, if you're mad at your team, if you're an Auburn fan, you're like, see, we should have had Pavia, or if you're another team that's quarterback situation, just remember, most likely your coach wasn't going to be willing to do what Clark Lee did, which was bring in Jerry Kill and Tim Beck and just say, do a makeover of what our team is offensively to fit what Pavia's strengths are. Let's go win football games.
Yeah.
It was a bloodbath in the top 10 last week, though, wasn't
it? Dude, I've never seen anything like it.
Tennessee.
I honestly think that Alabama. In a lot of ways, and y'all probably tell me I'm wrong, I think in a lot of ways Tennessee fans might have had a worse week because of what that program's been and kind of on the upswing. And then it just straight up looked like you got out physical. Like, it felt like Arkansas bullied Tennessee when you look at offensive line and defensive line.
Well, Sam Pittman saved his job for now because of that.
For sure.
I think he saved his job for at least for a couple years.
I think he saved it at least for another year.
And Nico didn't look like the player he looked before. And that's
freshman growing pains.
But It's just when I see a player hang on to the ball, it might be fresh from growing pains, but the coaching's got to come into play. But you got to be in that guy's ear, especially now more than ever, when you can be in their ear up to 15 seconds to go into play. Be like, no matter what happens, put the ball in the end zone. No matter what happens, throw that ball.
I think situational, to Rob's point, I think situational football is a freshman growing pains thing. But even just operationally, when you look at what was happening to Tennessee, the interior of Tennessee's offensive line was awful at times against Arkansas. And you just did, and I think that is such a head nod to Sam Pittman and the culture he has brought to Arkansas, where they play tough, man. They don't they're not always the best team, and they're going to struggle. And I think their win total was like 3.5 this year, right? I mean, it was something really, really low, maybe 4.5. But they play hard, and when you do that and you play against a quote-unquote, and I hate this word, but when you play against teams that are more finesse, that are kind of schematically over you, that's what can happen sometimes. In
Arkansas,
the trenches,
like Kentucky,
in the interior.
You think kind of in that kind of feisty,
they are
physical
Sam Pittman.
Way.
Yeah, yeah. I think Sam Pittman brings an edge where those guys are like, look, man, we might get beat, and we might get the crap beat out of us, but I'll be danged if we're not going to go down swinging and throwing haymakers.
What do you think about that? What Oregon's going to show up? Because Oregon has been pretty.
Their offensive line's been really banged up.
And you cannot, I mean, whatever you think about Ohio State.
They've been on cruise control.
Well,
what,
yeah.
Akron,
but
Western Michigan, Marshall.
Yeah, but, I mean.
Iowa scored one touchdown in the past 3 years.
But all that said, Ohio State is normally pretty good in the trenches. And if you come. You play Oregon, and they're not very good in the trenches. I mean, I know it's at Autzen Stadium, which is going to be different for Ohio State. That's a crazy atmosphere now.
Yeah, yeah. Y'all tell me if I'm wrong. I said this conversation yesterday. I think Ohio State, because of the money now, because of NIL and that money that's going around college football, I think Ohio State's the college football version of the Yankees now.
Yeah.
Where they're spending a lot of money, and you just hope they get beat. You're like, dude. Y'all are going to have
What's
a lot
their
of fans.
Payroll, 20 million?
Right, yeah. A lot of fans, but everybody that's not a Yankees fan is absolutely rooting against the Yankees. And I feel like it's the same. If you're not an Ohio State fan right now, it's not like, well, it's going to be a good game. It's, I hope Ohio State gets the crap beat out of them in this game. And it comes all down to the zeros. It feels like they're throwing out.
Good for the players getting paid, but the spirit of college football, the soul of it is rotted.
Well, they got to fix it, man.
The Big Ten actually
gotta fix it.
Stood up for it. Actually stood up for college football. They don't want to do these private equity things.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with private equity? Institutions, entities that don't build anything. They just prey upon everyone else. All right, Falcons, you got some numbers?
I got some numbers. I'm going to tell you what the Falcons are the best at in the league and what they're the worst at in the league. And maybe how Carolina matches up against both of those things, Rob.
All right, that's coming up next in the morning shift. Got Triple In for Tiffany. And by the way, Falcons fly over Sunday night after hopefully what will be a win in Charlotte. We're the flagship station of the Atlanta Falcons Sports Radio, 1990 game. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Want a smart, lasting, clean? Check out Zero Res. Mike, I know you got some numbers, but the NFL, record number of close games the last 3 years. 2022, 92 games decided by 6 points or fewer. Last year, 5 games in 1 day decided by a game-winning field goal. We saw what happened last week, too. All the 1 o'clock games seemingly went down to the last possession.
What do you think's the cause of that? Because I have thoughts.
Parody. What Paul Tagliabue. It's Paul Tagliabue's wet dream, basically.
I have thoughts. Here's what I think is one of the reasons it's pointing in that direction. You tell me if I'm right or wrong about parody and about games coming down to the wire. Because obviously we've seen it firsthand. I think the fact that when a team is up and another team is trying to come back, right? Let's just say Falcons are up by 10. Panthers are driving at the end of the game, trying to make it a one-score game, right? What are you doing? You're in obvious passing downs. What type of things usually happen in obvious passing downs? Number one, roughing the passer.
Yep.
You're even if you land on the guy wrong right now, you're getting a flag and an automatic first down. Number two, pass interference. But also unnecessary roughness, personal fouls, right? When you got guys, you know that they're going to be throwing the crossing route, and the safety comes up and levels. I mean, look at Derwin James and everything else going on there. I think a lot of that lends itself to the ability of the teams that are down by one score or multiple scores at the end of the game, making it a little bit closer. And I think that's one of the attributes in my opinion, to why things are close. But I do think there is a lot of parity in the league, and Rob, I've mentioned this a number of times, and I think Bo will agree with me. This is the fairest league in the world. Yep. Like the salary, the hard salary cap, the draft, everything else, there's no luxury tax. There's nothing like that. It's the fairest league in the world.
Yeah, as far as that goes, I don't necessarily agree with the other stuff, because if you're within one score already, you know, you're getting, and that's how you're getting back in games. I don't think necessarily penalties are keeping games close. I just think that's where we are talent wise. I mean, you look at all these teams, and like I said earlier, the one thing that separates all these teams to me is coaching. That's why when I brought that up with Joel Klatt's comments, the coaching doesn't matter, it's just quarterback play.
Quarterback play is a big part of it.
It
too,
is a
though.
Huge part, but it's the most important position in sports. There's no doubt that it's a huge part. But look at good quarterbacks that lose with bad coaching, and you're controlling these players and everything.
You could have bad personnel too. I mean, there's many different.
I don't think that there are teams that are just so god awful in the NFL. Now, the ones that you know are the ones that go 1-15. They're usually in cap hell. But even go back to 2022 with the Atlanta Falcons. It was the worst dead cap situation in the history of the game. Now, part of that's because of where we're at, you know, money wise with the cap. But they still went 7-10, and they were in almost every game. Why? Because whether we like to admit it or not, Arthur Smith knows how to maximize his talent. Arthur Smith's biggest issue was he believed in himself too much.
I agree with you. I love and honestly, I think a lot of people, at least that I've talked to around the Falcons, just have grown even more respect for pre-snap motions and formationally what Arthur Smith was trying to do. He just didn't have the right pieces in the right places to be able to get it done a lot of the times. And you look back at some of the games. I mean, just look back at some of the quarterbacks you lost to last year. If you just simply beat Josh Dobbs and Bryce Young, we're probably not. I mean, isn't that think about what I just said. If you just beat Josh Dobbs and Bryce Young last year, you're probably not talking about a different regime here.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable to think of it that way.
And it's all because he believed in what he could do with Desmond Ridder too much. He believed in his – you can call it arrogance. You can call it ego.
Confidence.
You know, I think – well, the way he delivered it, it didn't come off just like it's not an arrogance. It's a confidence. It came off more like it's an arrogance. He talked to people and treated it. But the reality of the situation was, if he would have just said, you know what, go get me a guy and we'll be in the play. They would have been in the playoffs last year. I believe that. I do believe when they say we were a quarterback away from making the playoffs. There's no way they weren't, because to your point – they lost games they shouldn't have that were close to Bryce Young and Josh Dobbs and Kyler Murray.
Will Levis.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this real quick, 10 seconds. If you beat Josh Dobbs and Bryce Young last year, and Arthur Smith's still here, is Desmond Ridder still the quarterback?
I would say no.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, it would be hard for that, because I think
– I don't know who is, but I think they make
I think
move.
Arthur would have – the struggles would have been – so much still that you'd have been like, we've got to upgrade this position, and we will. And the sky's the limit.
Yeah. I think Arthur. I like what you said, Arthur. Too much. I think he would have come to a realization. Even my innovative, brilliant mind cannot turn Desmond Ridder into a bona fide NFL star.
I honestly think they would have made a run at Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, but I think they did anyways. To be honest with you,
I think they would. I think he would have been a perfect fit for what he wanted to do.
I would tell you that Arthur. To me, my take on everything last year was that Arthur realized what he had in Desmond and what he didn't have very early in the season. And I think
he
probably
crap.
Yeah. You probably saw a little bit of that with some of his stuff in media wise last year.
All right. Do you guys want some stats?
Well, they're for losers. I just want to hear numbers.
Let me hear. Let me underline for you guys the reason why the Falcons have to score from outside the 20. All right, the outside the 20. Mention this to Bo. I think the biggest part of last week's game is you never got in short yardage situations or goal line situations. Atlanta Falcons scored on explosives, right? There's honestly the risk, in my opinion, had you been tackled inside the five, if you're Kadarius Hodge, the Falcons might have to kick a field goal. Like, you could make that argument, as frustrating as that is. Here's a couple of numbers for you. By this metric, guys, the Falcons are the most explosive offense in the league. 24.7, so about one out of every four of their offensive plays have gone for 10 or more yards. Let me say that one more time. One out of every four plays the Falcons have run have gone for 10 or more yards. That's number one in the league, and I don't even think it's close. One out of every four have gone for 10 or more yards. Here's the issue. Atlanta has converted 43% of their red zone possessions for touchdowns. Only 43% of their red zone possessions for touchdowns. That's 29th in the league. It's almost like you're better off saying, hey, just fall down at the 21. Just fall down at the 21. We don't need to get in the red zone. They've been unbelievable as far as that goes. And honestly, we talk about, and good Lord, me and Bo have talked about this, so we're blue in the face. Defenses between the 20s almost feel like they're waiting to get to the red zone until everything shrinks. You can't, you know, run the receivers on all these go routes.
Yeah, the de facto 12th defender with the back of the goal line.
But the fact that Atlanta is 29th in the league in the red zone tells me that they're just not good at red zone. It's not a matter of defense is clamping down. All the defenses are clamping down in the red zone. Atlanta's just one of the worst offenses that actually taking advantage of it.
And I think, though, that some of that has been the comfortability with the quarterback and the receivers and the chemistry and the anticipation. And hopefully that's going away after last week where he said he just felt so much better with anticipating where they're going to be, coming out of their routes, all that stuff.
Didn't Kirk say something about he's normally used to throwing to those smaller, speedier receivers? It's kind of been an adjustment to him to deal with a bigger guy like Drake London or Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, I think so.
As far as tendencies and anticipation and windows.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of truth to that. But also I feel like with Justin Jefferson, he got such a trust with him where he would put he put Justin Jefferson up in 50-50 situations. And I've seen a lot of that in the way he throws to Drake London.
I thought it was really interesting, too. We talked to Arch, and he kind of brought this up that, the wiggle. He said he'd get to a point where he knew where one guy would make a shoulder wiggle, and he knew he was about to break his route off. You know what I mean? It was just a matter of repetition and playing with guys over a number of years that you get to know what they look like running those routes and those small, tiny little things that Kirk Cousins is still kind of getting to know, guys.
Yeah, to your point, I think we talked about it last week. Rob, we watched the video, the preview on Thursday before the game, me and Mike, and it opened with a play of Arch in 1986. It was a screen play, and he had to it wasn't there, so he rolled out, and he threw the ball deep, and he hits the receiver. I can't remember the name of the receiver because Arch knew, and Arch goes, yeah. He goes, that's a screen play. He goes, I remember that it was the first play of the game. He goes, but he knew that if it wasn't there, I was going to come to him. So he ran his route all the way in, and Arch hit him in stride, and they ended up winning that game.
Let me throw out a couple more numbers. I know we got like a minute left. How about this one? Carolina opponents have scored on 50.9% of their drives. That is 31st in the league. 50.9. You want the bad news?
Yeah, I never read it.
52% of the possessions against Atlanta the opponent has scored, which is the lowest rate in the league for defensively for Atlanta. So if there's anybody worse against possessions for the other team than Carolina, it's Atlanta. Now, score is field goal, and we've talked about it a number of times. I think Pittsburgh kind of weighs heavily on that as well. The Falcons are also, guys, unfortunately, we talked about the struggles offensively on third down. Falcons have the worst, defensively, the worst conversion percentage in the league, 48.5%. On defense, 48.5% of the third downs they're giving up.
But I'll make you feel a little bit better.
Please do.
They're the 13th best red zone defense in the league.
Let's go.
And nine out of 16 times, which according to this is 50%, but that doesn't really think it adds up. But
remember how I said that Atlanta only converts 42.9% of their red zone? The good news is that Carolina is the worst team in the league at keeping teams out of the end zone. 87.5% of their possessions, the opponent have scored a touchdown. So something is going to correct itself this weekend at 4 o'clock.
425. All right, 425. If pedantic squid is what that is. Hey, we're going to go in the huddle next. What happened last night on Thursday Night Football? Good night for Brock Purdy. Not so much for Seattle and Falcons. They'll be entertaining. Seattle next week. I get by Carolina first. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Oh, it's Friday on the Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany. Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Falcons, Panthers, Sunday, 4:25, right here on The Game. Before we get to in the huddle, Kevin Seitzer let go as the Braves hitting coach. And we all know when a team is slumping, it's entirely the hitting coach's fault. And when they're just bombs away, it's because the players are really good. That's what it boils down to, I guess. But
yeah,
okay, fine. Bring in somebody new. Okay.
My question would be: Is Seitzer's main job hitting mechanics, or is
mechanics
the situational
approach,
awareness also
all of
involved?
It, all of it.
Or
dissecting
or
film
is,
too.
Or is Brian Snitker more in charge of situational awareness when it comes to approach at the plate? That's what my main question would be. And I was shocked when they said the whole staff was coming back. I honestly, and in fact, think Snit's a legend. I think highly of all these guys, even the ones that have been let go. But there was and we've talked about it. There was an obvious lull in situational awareness at times for this team, as far as their approach.
They couldn't get a bunch of rejects to have triple crown quality numbers, I guess, is what it boils down
to.
Well,
this thing, and I know me and Bo have gone back for it. It's not numbers for me. It's just simply hitting the ball the right side of the infield or hitting a fly ball at the right time. Well, just
I think it's more than just approach when guys are on, too. I think it's just approach overall. I think maybe their approach overall this year was bad. I don't remember a lot of situations where they were just nobody on and they're just, you know, they're working counts. There were too many, like, you know, the 23 season, I felt like they worked counts well. They just getting pitchers to go deep. But this year, I feel like it was three swings and you go back down and sit down.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And I think that might have had something.
That's Sean Murphy's approach, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to break it to people, but Sean Murphy's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
There are a lot of people calling for, they're not getting rid of him.
Well, while we're talking about Braves moves, though, what's the next move? Is my question. Like, are you going into spring training with Kelnick in left and Arcia at short, and just saying that's our squad?
Well, I think it'll be Kelnick and Soler in left, and I pick up Ozuna's option. Arcia is where the shortstop position needs to be upgraded. Defensively. You can get similar play, maybe a little bit less of a defensive player, if you can get the bat. But you got to have a little more consistency at the plate from Orlando Arcia. And I think, you know, it was great in 23 when everybody was having a career year. Yeah, he looked good because
hitting's not contagious, and slumping is contagious.
Well, he slumped more than most. So, in some ways, he led the parade. So I think I'd like to have him on the roster still, but I think you got to upgrade the starting position. And Nacho ain't it yet, so don't come at me with that.
He's Nacho starting shortstop, yeah.
Nacho time yet.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's about it with the Braves. Max Fried probably not coming back, but you never know.
He's not coming back.
You never know, but I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
The Braves have told you what happens when guys make it to free agency.
Yep.
They don't bring them back.
There is a pattern there, certainly with a.
But we already gave you our best, man. Best of luck to you. That's all we can do.
All right, let's go in the huddle. All right, 49ers over the Seahawks last night. There was a call that wasn't made, a missed call on a muff punt. The punt actually hit the player's fingers. They went to the replay truck. They didn't have the footage available that proved that.
I saw that, man.
Yes.
I saw that.
And then I started thinking back to why was there a delay of game penalty against the Falcons when they're setting up for the field goal and the official standing over the ball?
Yeah.
I still don't understand that one either. The officiating just will always baffle me.
And the age-old question is it always been this bad, and we've just now realizing it with HD and all the angles that we have, or has it gotten progressively worse through the years? And
because
that's
officials can rely on the replay as a crutch. But then again, if a call's overturned, that doesn't reflect well.
Well, we rely on the replay to criticize them.
Yes.
So,
that's a good point.
I don't think they were – they're standing over the ball is not – has, you know, that has nothing to do with the replay. And just missing calls flat out has nothing to do with the replay. To me, that's a fundamental problem with the judgment of the referees on the field. I honestly do think we see and hear and know too much these days.
I think that, especially in the case with referees standing over the ball, there is just not a system in place, nor really should there be, probably. There's not a system in place for the referee to just simply be like, yeah, that's our bad. Like, the referee standing over the ball, it's I think the delay of game was the correct call in terms of the clock, but then you can't fault Atlanta when there's a referee standing over the ball for not being on the ball and snapping it. So I just don't think there's a system in place of being like, hey, you know what? clock ran out, but there was a guy actually standing over the ball, so we're going to run that back. Like, if you're Tampa, you're like, what? No! I just, there's not this, you know, kind of backyard philosophy going on in terms of correcting things, and nor should there be, but I just think that's the reason for a lot of the upset fans in the NFL. It's like, we can't go back and fix these things because we don't have just this system of being like, you know what, when one referee's standing in the wrong place, let's give him a redo. No, that doesn't work either. So as frustrated as I was, I kind of get the fact that they're not willing to change it.
It's also the one thing I think we need to not get too over the top with trying to fix every little thing. You know, human error is a part of all sports. And even down to the officiating. Now, you shouldn't have egregious calls. You shouldn't have a strike zone that expands during a game.
I was about to say, I think about the home plate umpire.
But, you know, but that said, the human error part is a part of the game. I do like the fact that different umpires have different strike zones where, you know, what they'll call on the, you know, the black of the plate or whatever. But the reality is it just can't be extremely egregious. If it's pass interference in the last 2 minutes, then it should have been pass interference the whole game. Or if it's pass interference the entire game, it should be pass interference in the last 2 minutes. Like, don't change what you're doing. I'm okay with the human error, but it should be consistent, if that makes any sense. You know, what is illegal touching, and when should it be called? Because it gets called randomly and it doesn't get called other times. That is consistency with human error.
All right, you look at the standings in the NFL. Of course, you got the Vikings 5-0, Chiefs 5-0, Commanders 4-1. Then you have this large, thriving middle class of teams that are 3-2 or 2-3. That's what the league is this year.
I'm glad you brought up, and I think, honestly, I think the Ravens are one of the best teams in the league. I still believe in Buffalo, even though they've kind of let me down a couple of times. The matchup between the Ravens and the Commanders this week is interesting. There are very few times you had a reigning MVP facing off against the odds-on favorite for MVP and Rookie of the Year.
Well, Jaden Daniels says he doesn't like the comparisons to Lamar, though. Yeah. Can I just be Jaden Daniels and not the next so-and-so?
Yeah, I don't mind him saying that.
I don't mind him saying that either.
And the amount of Heisman trophies, we said this last week, the amount of Heisman trophies on that field, you know, with Derrick Henry also in
oh,
the fold.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
There's and it was the same conversation a week ago when they were playing Joe Burrow. It's like these quarterbacks and facing off against Heisman trophies and MVPs and everything else going on, that's going to be an interesting one.
Well, you know, both these teams give them like 25 points a game. This might be a wild one on Sunday. But
yeah,
the over
is 51.5, yeah. And that's I like it. I like that over.
A little foreshadowing.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Who's your most who do you think's the most fraudulent maybe 3-2 team? I don't know what to make of the Cowboys at 3-2.
Yeah. I think they're still solid. They have consistency at quarterback. Yeah. I know a lot of people roll their eyes, but I'm a big Dak Prescott guy.
I am too. But he's a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, so that scrutiny is going to be a little bit different than
any other. That's going to come along with it.
You could look at Denver because they're a good defense and they've got offensive woes, but I think they're well coached. I tell you what,
yeah, they're Pittsburgh only scoring 19 points a game.
Yeah, well, they got a rookie quarterback. Yeah. Apparently he's still Ferris Bueller, according to his jerk head coach. Pittsburgh, to me, Mike, you're right. Here's why. You still don't know what the quarterback position is, and your defense can hold the rope for a long time. And they've only allowed 73 points against, which I think is tied for best in the league. But the reality of the situation is they've lost two straight because they couldn't score enough. And that is when they're going to start playing quarterback roulette to me. Is when they are losing games they should win because they can't score 20 points and 22 points or whatever.
I'll say this. I don't think they're fraudulent, but I think the injuries are going to start catching up with them in the near future, and that's Tampa Bay. And you saw that start to come to the forefront last week. I know that Atlanta needed overtime to beat them, but one of the reasons Atlanta's able to climb back is because of those injuries that you continue to get on the defensive side of the ball when you talk about that team. And do they continue to deal with that? And you're not seeing their captains, you know, all over the field and everybody else, they're going to start struggling if they can't get some of those guys healthy. So I don't think they're fraudulent in the way they got there. I just think that's a team that's really got to be careful about falling off in the future.
What day is it, Mike?
It's Fair Foul Friday, Ron!
Let's go!
I'm ready, baby. How about this one? 4 p.m. starts are better than Sunday night football, fair or foul? Another one. In the remaining 12 games, Kyle Pitts will not be held for less than 3 catches in any single game, fair or foul. We'll do that on the other side. That's coming up. It's the morning shift. It's mic'd up, Fair Foul Friday, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. You already know what time it is, baby. It's a fair or foul Falcons Freaky Friday going on here with Rob Tribble sitting over in the saddle over there.
I want to come in every Friday just for this segment. Just pop in or do a phone or
two. And you're more than welcome to, my friend. Bo's over here sitting side saddle, like he's Rob's mistress riding off into the sunset.
My side piece.
Yeah, he's he's the sidecar on the motorcycle right now.
Talking about, I'm sitting in the right spot.
It is what it is. It's in
your opinion. Pivot man in the. Never mind.
Listen, man, the sun continues to rise over the city of Atlanta on a Falcons Friday, man. So.
Jeez almighty. Just start the damn thing already before Rob puts us in a...
All right, you heard him actually coming in.
Worst spot.
You hear it every day on the mic'd up intro. How about this one? Let's think about this earlier. Red Hot Chili Peppers are actually a better band than Nirvana. Red Hot Chili Peppers, better band than Nirvana. Fair foul, Rob, we'll start with you.
That's a foul ball straight back in the upper deck. Nope, nope.
I'm a little bit
and Nirvana might be slightly overrated too, by the way.
I've seen the Peppers 3 times live, and obviously I have a soft spot in my heart for them when it comes on.
I love them, but they're not all that compared to. They weren't as innovative, not quite.
And also, Flea did the national anthem at the national championship game I played in, which is the most random thing.
That was a bizarre acid trip of a.
He's wearing a kilt, like it was strange. Anyways,
big Laker fan.
Josh Groban was doing the vocals of all people. I have no idea where that came from. Pretty sure he was an American Idol guy. Anyways, Bo, what do you think?
Well, even though I loved Anthony Kiedis in Point Break, I would say it's foul.
Yeah.
They've got a couple of good hits, and the rest of the music is just hard to listen to for me. Yeah. So,
Yeah, man.
John Frusciante, though, really, right. Really, really good guitarist. But other than that, not a big Chili Peppers guy.
All right. Who would you say?
Will Ferrell on the drums.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that Chad Smith?
Yeah, it is Chad Smith.
Yeah, I thought that's who you were talking about.
That's the oddest thing, that they look so much alike.
So much alike, man.
They had the drum off.
They were sitting next to each other on Fallon or whatever it was, and I still couldn't tell them apart. I mean, it was crazy. All right, how about this one? We'll go to the Falcons game this week and mention it. Obviously, two of the worst pass-rushing teams in the NFL, but with the Panthers being dinged up along the offensive line, 3 sacks. 3 sacks for the Atlanta Falcons this weekend. Against Andy Dalton. 3 sacks this weekend. Bo, we'll start with you. Fair or foul?
Yeah, I'll go with fair because I think some of the numbers show that if you you heat up Andy Dalton, he's pretty terrible this year. And with the offensive line woes, I think also this team maybe is feeling themselves a little bit, especially defensively. Maybe they come in, they have that little bit of confidence, and they're able to get him down on the ground.
Mm. The number is going to be 4.5. They'll have 4.5 sacks. I always thought the half sack.
I don't know if that's even possible as far as the record books go, but Rob Ryan 4.5.
Four.
And he's always a fan of obscure numbers, that Rob Tribble over there. All right, I tease this one going in. How about this? 4, and I'm going to do this for Bo, 425 starts. 425 starts are actually better than playing on Sunday Night Football. I actually think 425 starts are better than being on that 820 kick on Sunday Night Football.
What do you mean, as a player or as a fan
just
watching?
In general, I just think that they are better games. I like the fact that that you start in the daylight and the sun's kind of going down the entire way. I know that not every NFL fan's watching you, but you're coming off of those 1 o'clock games. Most fans are still glued into the TV, and there's only a couple of games. I love the 425 time slot. It's better than Sunday Night Football for me. Fair or foul, Rob?
I'm going to say foul just by a little bit. Because I grew up on Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen always doing that 4 o'clock game.
What
you know,
was his
or Pat Summerall. Dick Enberg, Merlin Olsen.
He said his first name was such gusto.
Richard Enberg. But something about, I think Sunday Night Football actually has a little bit more luster now than the Monday Night Football games. There's something kind of a big time about that.
Well, they've been better games.
Yeah.
They get better matchups.
They can flex Monday Night games. That's not starting till what, week 12, though?
Yeah. I don't like that. But, I think it's fair. For me personally, I like them better.
For sure.
And I think it's, there's something like, now it sucks for me because I miss a lot of the starts with the 1 o'clock when we're at home.
Yeah.
But I do get home and get to watch some of those the second half is 425s. They normally feel like big games. I don't get to watch all the Sunday night games either. So, I like that 425. They have 405 kicks as well. But those are normally, the 425 is normally the national afternoon broadcast.
How about this one? Let's go to a little college football. If Texas beats Oklahoma Saturday, they're a lock for the SEC championship game. If Texas beats Oklahoma on Saturday, they are now a lock for the SEC championship game. They obviously still have, what, maybe six SEC games left? And one of those games will be against Georgia. But if they beat Oklahoma this weekend, Bo, we'll start with you. They are a lock for the SEC title game.
I think that's that is, while I think they are going to play in that game, I think the premise of the question is foul because they will have to play Georgia at home next week, and then they have to play Vanderbilt on the road, which we know Vanderbilt is not a push. That's not an easy walkthrough. Florida, man, that's not a bad game. At Arkansas, which can be physical. Kentucky can be physical. And then they have to play Texas A&M.
That's a good one.
And
that Texas A&M's way better than people realize.
And Texas A&M's very good, and they're very physical, yep. Especially up front. They can get after you with their rushers. So I don't think it's a cakewalk for Texas. Their schedule is a lot harder than people realize.
All right, what do you think,
Rob? I'm going to say foul. I see maybe two losses in there.
Ooh, okay.
What if Kentucky sneaks up and bites them?
What if
Texas A&M?
Let the chaos reign.
Yeah, there it goes.
Let the chaos reign.
Texas has two losses on that schedule.
I don't know that anybody in college football is consistent, and I think that's where that kind of conversation comes from. All right, let me get through these pretty quick. We got 2 minutes, and I got like five of them. Fall weddings, fair or foul?
Foul.
Fall weddings.
Foul. How
like,
dare
I'm thinking
you?
About the slate on Saturday
thinking?
College football. And I'm like, don't do it. Nobody
even,
don't do it.
Even the fact that you asked us that is foul.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Aaron Rodgers retires after this season. A lot of money still on the table for Aaron Rodgers. But I don't know that he wants to undergo a coaching change.
Fair. He's got a lot of interest. He'll have other opportunities.
Okay. Foul. His ego won't let him.
Kirk Cousins, career high 58 pass attempts this past week. That will never happen again in Kirk Cousins' career. 58 pass attempts will never happen again. But we'll start with you, fair or foul?
I think it's foul. I think it could. You never know. They might be behind big in a game. They might have to throw it a lot. I think it's foul. You don't never know.
All right. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's got a 60 in there somewhere.
All right. How about this one? Brown water around a fire is hands down the best fall activity. The best fall activity, period. Bourbon in front of a fire.
Bonfire?
The best fall activity.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. There's nothing even close. I don't want to talk about golf. I don't want to talk about sitting on a patio. I'm talking about brown water in front of a fire, best fall activity.
Menage a trois? No. Doesn't even compare.
Around the fire?
I don't want to pull. Change that question. No, go ahead, Bo.
I can disappoint two women at once.
I think it's phenomenal, but I would say foul because I think a good cold beer, maybe a craft lager from New Realm Brewery, the Al Inn would be a hell of a thing in there.
What do you think?
Man, that brown water with a bonfire is chef's kiss.
All right, let's try one more. Caleb Williams will catch and overtake Jaden Daniels for the Rookie of the Year. Caleb Williams will actually catch and overtake, as he becomes more comfortable, Jaden Daniels for the Rookie of the Year. 3-2
All
Bears.
Caps foul.
Okay,
foul,
you think Jaden Daniels is locked? Or you just don't like Caleb Williams, one or the other?
Oh, I don't dislike Caleb Williams. Yeah. I wish him well.
Just don't think he'll do it.
I think it's foul because the Panthers aren't on the schedule every week for Caleb Williams to shine.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, that's fair foul Friday.
Nice,
I appreciate
nice.
You guys playing. Thank you very much.
What about the quick Kyle Pitts one, though? Just quickly.
Yeah, the Kyle Pitts one. Kyle Pitts will not be held for less than three catches. I kind of had a vibe for where I thought both of y'all were going to go, so I was like, the look that both of y'all gave me going into break. because, he comes off zero.
He's
going to
be much better. There's going to be those off weeks.
What do y'all think? Fair or foul? He will not be held for three or less catches this season.
Foul, again. But he's going to have seven catch days, too.
Yeah,
going forward.
I agree.
What did Randy McMichael say about
it? It'll average out.
Run straight ahead, brother.
Yeah, just
run straight ahead.
Catch it on a run. You don't need to change direction. Just go.
That fine former NFL tight end, Randy McMichael, a damn good dog. Andy Randy, by the way, 11-2 today. Steakhouse, 9-11 as well. We're going to come back. Oh, boy. Let's see. I'm two games under 500 with picks. Look at you, though. 13-10.
Don't you jinx me.
Wow.
I don't want to talk about it.
That's crazy. Look at you. The oracle that you are. We're going to do some picks coming up, top of the hour, picks that you don't really care about. It's next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 1990 Game. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. You selling your house? Well, contact Mark Spain, get to packing. David Archer going to join us at 8:20, so Falcons, Panthers, Sunday 4:25. We get Chris Myers and Mark Sanchez. But do what I do. Sync up your FUBO with Wes and Arch, and you're good to go.
Yeah, if you decide to listen to that game, you deserve everything you get from having to hear it. So you need to listen to us. You need to do what Rob's doing.
I told Bo this last week. Or I think you and I talked about this, Bo.
Yeah.
And this is not to get too deep in the weeds of what you and I do on Sundays or during Thursday night broadcasts or whatever. So usually, right, Chris Goforth and I sit in the concourse pregame, talk to people, spend a couple hours in there just talking about football and taking everybody to Wes and Arch. And then right around halftime, I come back to the studio here in Midtown so that I can watch the second half, and then we do the postgame from the studio, all right, just so everybody's clear. Usually, what I'm doing is I'm listening to Wes and Dave on the live feed back here at the studio or on the radio or whatever, and I'll have the TV kind of on in the background so that I can almost watch a replay of what Wes and Dave are saying, because they're so good at describing what's going on in the actual game. And then, you know, because of the TV delays and the satellite signals and everything else, it's about 60 seconds between what Wes and Dave are describing and what I'm seeing on Fox or CBS. Craziest thing happened on Thursday night. The delay for Amazon, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's streaming only or Amazon's technology, I don't know what it was. The delay for Amazon was only like 5 seconds, dude. Like, I'm listening to Wes and Dave live, almost live feed, talk about what's happening on the screen at the exact same time as Amazon is showing the play. It was the craziest thing. I'm used to watching on a 60-second clip. Usually the TV feed is two plays behind.
I think our local producer might have been worrying about other things and maybe had us in a delay on that. But I don't know. Also, if that was a social media post, I would have been like, yeah, that's too much to follow. I'm not reading all that. You went way in the weeds there with all that. But, yeah, I think that I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something to do with the fact that they don't have to worry about normal viewership because it's all stream. But then again, I always thought stream was always behind because it's on the internet. So I have no clue what Amazon's doing with their broadcast.
I don't either. It was awesome, though. Like I didn't have to watch on a delay while listening to Wes and Dave. I didn't have to do – The point is that, you know, we always put it out every week. If you want to sync up your TV to Wes and Dave, I didn't have to do that. It was already synced up. It was pretty cool.
All right, let's do that. Let's do these picks, shall we? Don't we have a little sounder for that?
We normally do, but maybe we don't. Maybe it's just the music.
In the machine.
It's all right. You know, it's Friday for Dial-On. He's ready to get up and play some Mario Kart on stream.
He's got one foot out the door already, doesn't he?
Well, he wants to stream his Mario Kart.
He's in there texting, taking selfies, doing his little TikTok dances in the kitchen, scantily clad.
Boy, so smooth.
There
this
you go.
This is a well-oiled machine. How about that?
And you know, since you guys want to take some shots, guess what? I was feeling a little bad delivering this bad news, but now I don't feel so bad anymore. So guess what? I'm going to do this with a little bit of a smile on my face.
Oh, dear.
Bo and Mike, your guys' records are worse than what you thought they were.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not 13-10.
Well, I knew I wasn't that. 10-13 because I didn't go 2-2 last week.
I was going to take it, but I was like, nah, I'm good.
Oh, so is this a typo?
It's a typo. Bo, you actually went 1-3, so you're 9-14. And Mike, you went 2-2, so you're actually 12-11.
So let me get this
that
right.
Makes more sense.
You're trying to rip us for screwing up the show sheet. Interesting.
No, I like I said, I was going to do it with a little bit of, you know, guys, I messed up, I'm sorry. But then, you know, since you guys want to have your Mario Kart and TikTok comments, I did it with a little bit of pleasure. I'm happy I messed up. I'm happy I got delivered this news on the air.
This man just dropped a TLDR on me for trying to tell everybody to sync up Dave and Wes on the app. He dropped a too long, didn't read, TLDR.
He dropped a cool story,
it wasn't
bro.
It that, but you... Yeah. You talked about doing post game for 2 hours and driving to the stadium.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to know why.
As far as my picks, I'm 4-6. Not that you care, but I'm tanking for Tua.
Wait, how do we know that's accurate? I mean, Dylan might have screwed that up.
I always get stuff with Rob right. Rob's my guy.
All right, Rob. Let's start with the first mandatory pick. Let's do college football first. I think that comes first. You have to pick Ohio State at Oregon. And Ohio State is a 3-point favorite.
Oof. Ohio State's been on cruise control. Oregon's trying to get healthy on the O-line. They are at home. I think Dan Lanning's a better coach than Ryan Day, actually. But he doesn't have the payroll. With Oregon, by a touchdown, 30-23 at home over Ohio State.
I think that's really that's a good pick. I think you're kind of on there. However,
not so fast, my friend.
Ohio State's just immensely talented. Oregon's kind of been up and down, up and down, up and down. Don't forget what Kalen DeBoer's offense was able to do a couple of times to Oregon last year. I think Ohio State better in that realm. I know that to me, the fact that you're in Autzen and it's everything else going on with it, and Ohio State's still a 3-point favorite. Ohio State's a better team. They'll pull away in the end. I think Ohio State minus the 3 points.
I like where Mike's going with this. Ohio State's more physical, but this is going to come down to the quarterback play. And if Dylan Gabriel was the star quarterback that everyone kind of talks him up to be, he wouldn't be on his third team in 3 years. Give me Ohio State and the points.
I like that, man. I like that.
All right. Lions visiting the Cowboys. And Detroit, 3-point favorite.
Bo, you want to start with this one?
Yeah. Detroit's got too much offense for a banged-up defense in Dallas. I think it's going to be a shootout, but I'm taking the Lions to cover the 3.
Yeah. See, this is where that – and this was makes me nervous because what I'm reading through Vegas is that Detroit is just immensely better than Dallas. When you're talking about Detroit and these two Thanksgiving teams – and you talk about them going on the road, and they're a 3-point favorite at Dallas, who I think is still a good team. That tells me Vegas really likes Detroit. The problem is I really like Dallas, and I think that Dallas can play a brand of football in this game, and what goes up must come down. I like Dallas plus the 3 at home. I just think there's too much on the line for that team. They're going to be gritty. Dak Prescott makes a throw to CeeDee Lamb at some point in that game that kind of pulls them ahead. I like Dallas plus the 3 points.
You like losing money.
I think both teams find their way into the 30s.
Ooh.
I do. With Dallas winning 37-31.
All right. I like that. I'll take that all freaking day. Let's go.
All right, what we got next? We have, college picks?
Yeah.
Another college?
Do a college lock. I can start with this one. I'm going to go to the Florida-Tennessee game, which I think there's a lot of questions around Tennessee coming off the loss to Arkansas. What is Nico Iamaleava? What is Josh Heupel? They got out-physicaled. The problem is they won't get out-physicaled by Florida. That's not going to happen.
No, they won't.
So I'm not even going to pick Tennessee in this
game.
No, it's not going to happen.
I'm not even going to pick Tennessee in this game. I'm just going to tell you that the over is going to hit, and it's a tall one. It's 57 points, but I can see a 42-21 kind of finish for Tennessee and Florida this week. Give me the over in Florida and Tennessee for my lock of the week, over 57.
My college lock, I think you're hateful, by the way, by picking on the Gators. But
you agreed with me.
I do agree with you, but I'm not the one that brought it up. I was going to leave that unsaid. LSU and Ole Miss, it's a night game. It's going to be fun. Death Valley is going to be just rolling. Those Bayou folk are going to be all oiled up, greased up, ready to go.
That's hot.
I'm going to tell you something. That over-under at 62.5, you could make it 70, and I'd pick the over. LSU has never seen an offense in the last 3 years that they want to stop. And Ole Miss can put up points, but I think LSU's got a good offense, too. They're going to put up points. This is going to look like USC and LSU did at the start of the year. Give me the over. 62.5. Could be 80.
All right.
That's the game. That's my college game as well. Baton Rouge at night, LSU 33, Ole Miss 28.
That's a good number.
What's that? What is that number? It's not 62.
No, it's not. That's 61?
Yeah. That's what my math says. I don't know. Maybe Mr. Chick-fil-A Garrett can correct me if I'm wrong. All right. My NFL lock. Two Heisman Trophy winners going at it.
Dang it.
Two of the
hotter offenses in the league right now going at it. The over is 51.5.
Okay.
I'll take that over.
Yeah. I'm glad we're not picking the same thing. I'm not picking the under. But I'm also on the same game. Ravens, Commanders. Here's the thing about this game. Commanders are the toast of the town in the NFL right now. Everybody's talking about Jaden Daniels, the 4-1 star, Dan Quinn, everything else that's going on. And yet, when you look at this game and you see a 4-1 Commanders as a 6.5-point underdog is what I have it to the 3-2 Ravens, that tells me all I need to know as far as Vegas goes. They love the Ravens in this game. It's a home game for the Ravens. When you look back, guys, at the history of MVPs against rookie quarterbacks and these quarterback matchups, the MVP has almost always torched, the rookie of the year candidate. I think that Lamar Jackson, it's just ho-hum. Derrick Henry, another 150 on the ground. Ravens just walk away with it. I like the Ravens minus the 6.5 against the Commanders.
I think Dan Quinn's got something for the MVP. How about that?
We'll see.
How you like that?
We'll see.
Although Derrick Henry scares me, as he should. Rob?
I'm going to go Broncos, Chargers, two teams that don't score a lot, but they don't give up a lot of points either. I don't know what the over-under is. I got the Chargers winning 16-12.
It's 36.5, and I almost took the under, but it scared me because of it just feels like a moment where you have a head coach calling out his quarterback and them getting into it. You have the emphasis on scoring with the Chargers and what Harbaugh's been talking about all week. It just scared me away from taking that under because it feels like the trend might be broken. And that trend, you can't pick the under every time with teams like that.
Nope. You know, I got scared away from an under as well. I was going to look at the Saints and Bucks this weekend. I think it's 41.5, and I was like, Spencer Rattler is starting for the Saints. Lord knows what's going to happen. 41, though, is just a little bit too close for comfort for me, so I couldn't go with that one. I think that's probably right on the number.
That's an interesting game to watch.
Yeah, it is.
It's divisional. Just see
really
what
interesting. Both teams dealing with a ton of injuries.
Spencer Rattler, too. Let's see what he can do as a rookie making his first start. All right. Going to come back. We're going to talk to the man himself, David Archer. Going to join us next on the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Falcons, Panthers, 425. Without further ado, let's go out. Color analyst, former Falcons quarterback, David Archer. Arch, my question for you. Falcons not necessarily stopping the run. They're not running the ball either. Cardinal rules of football, yet you're still 3-2. What can this team do to get the rushing attack back on track? You haven't rushed for 100 yards since, what, week two against the Eagles?
Yeah, I just think you got to keep working at it, Rob. I don't think that there's any special secret to it. Obviously, you got to continue to probe different areas of the field, continue to run the football inside and outside. But I think that it's just a matter of continuing to run the football. I think some of the big numbers of the teams that are leading the league in rushing kind of disguise it with the fact that quarterbacks are on the ball. I think the top two rushing teams in the league are Baltimore and Washington. I think they're both playing each other this weekend, and they've got quarterbacks that are running for 45 to 50 yards a game. So you're not going to get that. So you just got to continue to run it. You've got to continue to work on your screen game. I think that the screen game we talk about all the time is an extension of the run game. And if you're not doing that very well, which I don't think we are, I don't think we're a really good screen team. And some of that has to do with the offensive line, understanding the timing, getting out there. There's different levels of screening, whether it's, three count screen or the quick screens or whatever. I think that's got to be a part of things too, but you got to be able to probe all the areas of the field, the perimeter as well as the inside. And then your play action game's got to be really good. So they've got to continue just to work at it.
Yeah, well, Archer trying to talk dirty to me this morning with the old screen game and the three count, the old jump and dump, if you will, over the middle. I mean, golly, man, just get me oiled up next time. Feeling good about this.
You have a cigarette after this.
Arch, we've kind of been talking throughout the week. When you look back on it, one of the keys to success, strikingly, last Thursday was that the Falcons never really found themselves in a ton of red zone possessions, not really many, short yardage kind of situations. Falcons, obviously the highest rate in the league. We talked about it earlier. Highest rate in the league at plays that have gained 10 or more yards. Almost one in every four plays for the Falcons gained 10 or more yards. Yeah, they're just not very good in the red zone. The good news is that Carolina is not very good at defending the red zone either. What do the Falcons need to do this weekend once they get to that 15, that 10-yard line, to be able to have success in tight spaces, moving forward as an offense?
Yeah, the explosiveness has been phenomenal. And I think they had 13 plays of 15 yards or more last weekend in the game, which is fun. You get this chunk plays and explosive plays, but then when you get in those confined spaces with the red, like the red zone, then there aren't any explosive plays down there because there's no place to be explosive. Right. So now you've got to get back to what Rob was talking about. You got to be able to run the football. I think the teams that can run it down there are the teams that are really good in the red zone. And Atlanta has been inconsistent in the run game. The screen game, again, has to come into play. But I think that's going to come. I think that we saw a little bit of what this offense looked like from an explosive standpoint and maybe a little bit of what it can look like from an efficiency standpoint. Because of the development of Cousins and his receivers. And I think that the pinpoint passing, like the throw to Kadarius Hodges, outside shoulder with a man closing, kind of Hodge expects the ball there. The ball's on target. He spins out, runs for a touchdown. I thought there were a number of throws like that that indicated that they're starting to get on the same page as to Kirk understanding his receivers and the different body language that different guys have. Those tight window throws are going to have to be paramount when you get down there. And they're going to have to continue to throw the ball down there too. But maybe throwing the ball on first down in the red zone is part of the answer. Let's not run it and get stoned. And now it's second and 10. And now teams are expecting to throw the football. So Zach Robinson continues to evolve as a play caller with the guys as he learns these players, as well as the quarterback. The next level of that is the quarterback getting to know his guys. I think that those numbers are going to improve. And I think last weekend was maybe an indication of some of that because of how well and efficient they worked. I think they were 6 of 14 on third down last weekend. Now, this doesn't talk about the red zone, but you add in the 2 for 3 on fourth down, and now all of a sudden you like your conversion rate. Kept you on the field. You ran 81 plays. Obviously, you got to run plays to be a little bit more successful down there. But there's not one specific button you push. I just think you continue to work at it like we were talking about in the run game.
Well, let's talk about one of those receivers. Drake London, you know, Arch, to me, is a guy that he's grown on me a lot. He wasn't my favorite receiver in the year he was drafted. I was actually really big on Chris Olave, not that it matters, but he leads the team in catches, leads the team in receiving yards, tied for the team lead in touchdowns, and he's 12th in the league in that category as well, as far as receiving yards. What has happened with him over his growth where he has turned into, to me, the true number one for this team?
Well, again, I think, Bo, it's a little bit like what we're talking about in the first two questions, is you have to evolve in this game or you're not going to be around very long. And if you don't continue to get better, and Drake's one of these kind of guys that's a quiet dude. I don't know if I knew you guys have had a chance to talk to him. He's a really good kid. Young man. He's only 23 years old, so he continues to work at his craft. He's a guy that wants to be better. I think that's a number one thing. You go out and watch him at practice and how hard he's working at what he's trying to become, and that's become one of the best receivers in the league. I think the thing that certainly has helped him is having a quarterback that can get him the football when he's supposed to get it or understands and can talk to him about uncovering. His first touchdown was a thing of beauty because of what he's learned about coverage. He was playing the slot to Kirk's left. He went up the field and ran a stick route, which is just a little hitch route in the slot. A linebacker came and widened to take him away, so he uncovered to the inside. It almost became a slant route for him. He uncovered to the inside. Kirk was on the same page, hitting with the ball. And the thing that one of the biggest developments he's made is his run after catch. I mean, think about the play he made right before Mooney comes in to make the catch, or before Hodge comes in to make the catch. He catches a ball and makes two guys miss, gets up the field, takes a big shot that ended up getting like 15, 18 yards on the play. The touchdown was a very similar play. Catches the ball at about the 8 or 9 yard line and punches it in the end zone with his physicality at 6'5 and 220 pounds. He's a problem, you know, and so I think that's a part that people really have kind of discounted about him because he's a big guy. He's not going to be a run after the catch guy. Well, he's been completely a different scenario this year. So again, the development of a young player, I think we think that he's been around for a long time. He hasn't been, you know, and so I think that he just continued to work at it and he wants to be good. And that's what you love about him.
Arch, it took us a little while to see some of the draft picks on defense play a heck of a lot. Ruka Rororo, heard his name mentioned a few times last week, meaning he was kind of impactful. And what do you think of J.D. Bertrand? What do you think of the rookies and how they're progressing?
Yeah, I thought that it was a big deal, Rob, that those guys played a lot in the preseason. Here's where that begins to pay dividends for you. You knew injuries were going to add up, but Rororo and, of course, Brandon Dorlus, who hadn't gotten on the field yet, another draft pick, those guys. And, of course, J.D. Bertrand played a ton in the preseason. I thought that was a big deal for them just to be able to step in and kind of seamlessly step in. I thought Rororo played with his hair was on fire. I thought he was an energy guy. I thought he did a really good job of commanding more than one block. If you tried to block him one-on-one, which is what they saw on tape, then he's a problem. And he did a couple of really good things in the run game, forced run game wide. Mike will tell you that, you know, the worst thing against the run, especially if you're running zone run, is if you blow it up with penetration where the back can't press it and try to cut back. If he's only limited to one track in the run game, and Arororo was doing that because of what he was doing with his job from the defensive tackle position. I thought J.D. Bertrand got lost a couple of times. I thought, especially in coverage, like I got lost a couple of times, and some of that just has to be with repping and understanding, you know, some of the looks that people are trying to take advantage of you on. But I thought that for the most part, he has some thump at linebacker. He's a guy that's willing to come in and stack and shed as opposed to run around blocks, which I think is going to help in the run. Will help in the run game, and that's where, you know, Mike's guy Nate Landman. If we get Nate Landman back on the field, that's the way Landman plays. Landman is as Mike so aptly nicknamed him, the landmine. He's not going anywhere. You know, he stacks and sheds. Mike can explain that when I get off, but he's not running around people, because when you start running around blocks, now you're creating creases in there that those backs are looking for. So that's something that I think JT Bertrand brings to the table as well. So I think the two young guys really stood up and played well.
Former Falcon quarterback, current Falcons radio network analyst, and my friend Dave Archer joining us here on the morning shift. Arch, what's the your biggest concern about playing the Panthers this week? What is do you think that the one thing that they can do, or the one player, or whatever it may be, that causes the biggest threat to a win for the Falcons on Sunday?
Well, I think number one thing is don't disrespect these guys. These are this is a National Football League team. I think everybody that's on the periphery that hasn't lined up and played these games looks at it and says, well, this is a bad team, so this should be a blowout. You're going to roll over these guys. As soon as you disrespect them and don't give them the credit they deserve of being one of the 32 teams in the National Football League, you're going to get your ass handed to you on Sunday. You have to go in there and treat them with the respect that they deserve, and then go down and take the football game from them. I think that's number one. Number two, the things they do well, obviously Chuba Hubbard's playing well, but they're running the football. Rob's talked about that. They're running the football well. He should have 100-yard games back-to-back. He finished 3 yards shy against Chicago. Last weekend, he had an explosive run early on in the game that gave them the lead. He's coming into his own. He rushed for almost 1,000 yards last year, just under 905 yards or something last year. He's starting to come into his own. He was a big-time player at Oklahoma State, so he's starting to feel himself a little bit. Their offensive line's banged up. Don't let their offensive line get going. Make them feel like they're in an all-day fight and they don't want to be there, you know, and I think that's what something the defensive line's going to have to do. And Andy Dalton's been around now. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. This is a guy that's had success in this league. If you start letting him get a rhythm going with some of these young receivers and let them develop some chemistry like we got last weekend, then they can cause you problems. This is a National Football League team. I don't think they're going to be able to stand up defensively, but, you know, Clowney and Harris are two edge rushers that can cause you problems in the pass game. If you're camped in the passing game, those guys can get after you. If Clowney can play with the shoulder injury from last weekend, I don't think they're great against the run. And I think their inside linebacker, Tevin Wallace, the kid from Kentucky, is a big-time player. I think that he showed it last week. He had 15 tackles. They've got guys on their team that can make plays. Just don't give them any air to breathe. That's the main thing.
Arch, wrapping up with you. Is this going to be one of those difficult, plodding, Bataan death march games that Falcons of Carolina seem to play a lot? Is this going to be 16-13, 13-12, you know?
You probably just lost half your audience about the Bataan death march. You're gonna have to explain that one to them, Rob. They have no idea what that means.
There's two guys on the other side of the glass are there.
I think both teams obviously would like to get their run games cranked up. It's certainly what Carolina wants to do. So, and if Carolina can shorten the game, you know, possess the football, not allow Atlanta to have the football and have some of the explosive plays like they had last week, then it very well could be. But when you look at their games, they're trying to make explosive plays too. So I think Atlanta's going to have opportunities to make plays. I think they have opportunities to put points on the board. So just now you got to just go up and again, respect them. Go up and play the kind of game you're capable of playing like you played on Thursday night. You'll be fine.
Is Iowa State going to get a win in Morgantown tomorrow night?
Tough one. Tough one. You know, they've already started burning furniture and stuff up there already, Rob, so that's a problem. You know, it could be – That's a really difficult place to play, and now you throw it on a Saturday night, just like any really good college football town where you get lubed up and get ready to go. That crowd's really tough, but I like my guys up there. I think they're playing pretty good on both sides of the ball.
All right, brother, let's go get a win in Charlotte on Sunday. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, man. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, Squid. The life of you. What we got?
A player and an agent have split, and it's all amid a holdout that doesn't make sense. We'll talk about it next. and The Life of Squid on the morning shift. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
That's right.
Thank God it's Friday.
Space aliens are not space aliens. They're interdimensional demonic beings. That's what they are.
Why are they demonic? Why are they going to be demonic?
That's what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily. So I brought think they you have by Mark.
Well, that's okay.
They're just living the dream.
That's okay.
They're just flying around in their little, zooming little spacecraft. They don't have to be demonic.
From portal to portal, from dimension to dimension. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate.
It's a dog eat dog universe, Rob. They got to do what they got to do.
Well, Mark Spain can help you move somewhere off the grid if you need to.
Mars.
425 Falcons Panthers on Sunday. Got to win this one. You got to win this one. Then you're sitting 3-0 in the division. What is it, 4-0 in the conference?
Take care of business,
man. Just get it done. And don't listen to Chris Myers and Mark Sanchez. Just sync it up with Wes and Arch. With Squid pointing out on the charts to Arch, to Wes, what's going on the field, right? You pointed. You're the pointer thing.
Right? Yeah, the spotter I think, the technical term. Yes, I'm Wes's executive. I'm the executive producer of the network, of the broadcast booth, and I'm the spotter. And, we also have BoCam up there, so I'm normally the star of the show there, too. So, what can I say? I do everything,
Robbie. Pick your nose like they always caught Bobby Cox doing. Every time they flashed to Bobby Cox in dugout, he was like knuckles deep.
Just had a hanger.
No, you'll probably get me adjusting my stuff more than picking my nose.
Smelling your finger.
You swag and surf.
That's right, little W sauce, little Bloody Mary mix, because it's the weekend, and I know you're gonna have some of that flowing, Robbie T. And my friends at New Realm Brewing, official KSU partner, Craft Brewing, Craft IP, not Craft IP, but the Craft Lager, the Owl Inn beer is so good. I got like 7 6 packs in my mini fridge downstairs. They might crack a few open tonight, putting the Squid Nation koozie on it, and watching some Friday Night Football. Anyways, guys, I was on the way to work this morning in my W Sauce Orchard Craft, New Round Brewing Z71. And I was thinking about this Hassan Reddick stuff, and it's the weirdest damn thing, because guy wants out of Philly, gets his wish, gets traded, refuses to report because he says he doesn't want to play for the contract that he's under, which is fine. I get it. I think he has forfeited like $4.7 million or something. It's $800,000 a week.
By the time he gets what he wants, it's going to be a push, financially, it seems like.
CAA has now decided they're going to part ways with Hassan Reddick. And I think the best explanation that I have seen is from Andrew Brandt. You guys are all familiar with Andrew Brandt. He ran the Packers for years.
Yep.
Extremely smart, business mind, and football mind. And his tweet that he sent out yesterday, he says, look, no agent would tell a player to forfeit $800,000 a week in a sport with short careers and no guaranteed contracts unless you're Deshaun Watson, and that's a bust. Likely that CAA has told him to report. He has said no, and they have said, well, we can't help you anymore.
Good for them. And he is short-sighted on this, too. It's like you said, this career, it can all be gone in the blink of an eye. And I understand holding out for what you want, but in doing that, you're also forfeiting precious time and a very short career.
It's funny, man, because like a couple of things have to be true in this situation. Number one, they might be giving you a little black eye if you're CAA in this, and you're like, dude, we don't want this. That's a big enough agency where they're like, dude, we're worried about our reputation at this point. We don't have to worry about the money you might bring in. That's a billion-dollar company in terms of the contracts that they do. So that's a big deal for them and how people think of them in the industry. And I don't blame them, man. You have to draw – like at some point, you're more trouble than you're worth. I mean, I used to have a real estate license, and like – if somebody wants to go see 35 houses, guess what? I'm not driving you around. It's not worth my time. You know what I mean? At some point, you spend more gas money. So
he sounds toxic to me.
Well, and I think there's a lot of talk. Why won't the Falcons go get him? They didn't. I think that's probably why they didn't make the trade to begin with when he officially wanted out when he was on the trade market. I don't think he's the kind of guy that would come in here and fit with this locker room. It's a tight locker room, Rob. I've been around it. You've seen it. You've been up there. Like, this locker room loves each other. I don't think he's a team guy. I think he's about Hassan Reddick. And remember, last year he was a part of a defense that fell apart, and there was a lot of rumors of some internal squabbling going on with that football team. And I'm not saying he was the guy that was the cause, because that's unfair. But when you're acting like this and you come from that situation, the smoke, there's fire, speculation will begin, and he's gone to New York and done nothing for them.
Yeah, that's not exactly a franchise that didn't need the help either. I think we've all seen that kind of come to the forefront. So,
Can he call plays?
I don't know. You got to worry about the ethos.
I hate that word.
The ethos.
That word is getting thrown around by people that have no clue what it even means or can spell it.
Don't you dare talk about Raheem like that. The ethos.
That's not who I'm talking
the
about.
The ethos.
Steakhouse coming up top there. I think Steak is flying solo. Am I correct?
Yeah,
looks
he
like
is.
It. Yep.
Yeah, he is.
He does. He don't need nobody. Steak can handle himself quite well. So tune into him. And, of course, Andy and Randy after that. And Mike and Carl. I'll be back with you Sunday night. Falcons fly over after what will hopefully be a Falcons victory. Go to 4-2 on the year. Don't take nothing for granted. Got to go up there and do the job. It's Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game.